welcome to Pardon My Parsing. My name's Charlie Sauer, and I'm joined by my co-host, Kelly Marsh. How are you doing, Kelly?
I'm ecstatic. I'm just overwhelmed with joy. I feel great.
I like hosting this with you because I don't think you've not been happy.
Oh, well, I'm an exceptionally good liar. So take of that what you mean, what you will. Yeah.
All right. I mean, that is fair. I guess, you know, life is life. We can't always be happy, but I tend to believe that at least for this little bit that we're both happy, because I feel like we keep learning as we're doing this.
I find true joy in the podcast that is Pardon My Parsing Political Podcast. I find true joy, and that's not a joke, and I'm not lying.
All right, and because that's not a joke, before we get into this, hit that like and subscribe button, because we need your support to keep growing. Especially
yes.
In Uganda. We've fallen another 10 places.
But, yeah, I don't...
We want your support.
I don't know what's happening in Uganda, but I'm getting concerned, okay? We love you, Uganda. Please listen.
All right, so today we're talking about a speech. I was doing some research at some point, and I came across this speech for a completely unrelated reason. And then I kind of started looking at the speech, and it's actually the timing of the speech and when it happened and what it is and what he says is realistically, it's one of these cornerstone speeches. And I believe that we've at least, unlike the Burr conspiracy, which I had never actually heard of last week, and I've spoken to people since and they hadn't heard of it, at least parts of this speech, I believe, have made it. I don't think you necessarily learn it in school, but I believe some of the pieces are a part of our culture.
Okay, that seems intriguing.
So we have Dr. Benjamin Franklin at the Constitutional Convention. And one of the interesting things, and I'll admit this before we even get into it, is he didn't actually deliver the speech. And when I read it, I pictured him standing up and giving the speech, and he was just old and it was hot and this was the end of the convention and I don't think he wanted to deliver it. So he handed it to somebody else.
Didn't Ben Franklin invent lightning? No, wait. No.
He invented the meme. He drew the little picture of himself getting shocked. Okay, no, he probably didn't even draw that picture. But
right. Right. Well,
he did harness lightning. He did some electrical research.
I think most people do learn about Benjamin Franklin, one of the most interesting founding fathers, who was not a president, first postmaster general. I just learned he was the president of Pennsylvania, the sixth president of Pennsylvania, which at the time really was more like the governor. That was just the term that they used.
You don't have to ruin it with that. I've got a long term goal here that I want to prove that George Washington was not the first president.
Well, he wasn't the first president. George Washington wasn't president until 17. I have no idea what year it was. I do know what year it was, but it was not 1776. I know that.
I think it was this year that we're talking about. I think it's 1798.
98. That's exactly right. Somebody else was president before that.
1778?
No, the Continental Congress didn't meet for several years after the Declaration of Independence. We are dumb.
The presidents. Well, were the presidents that I was talking about. Because there was presidents of the Continental Congress. They just weren't serving under the same structure. You know, it's kind of like the presidents of Google are not the same as the presidents of Alphabet.
Okay, that's a really strange but fair comparison. I think it's actually fair.
So I might have been stretching the Ben Franklin thing. I didn't know that he was president. I didn't know that there was presidents that were called that, like mayors were called presidents.
Yeah, governors, mayors.
Governors.
Well, at least in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, was it a Commonwealth then? Yeah, I don't really actually know what I'm talking about. Send your cards and letters of anger to Charlie.
All right. Well, fortunately, you don't have to know that to talk about this speech.
Yep.
What we do have to know is, again, Constitutional Convention. These were a bunch of people that were coming together that wanted a better country. So, in a way, we need to understand that these aren't different people than today. These are Congress as we see them today. There's fewer of them in the room, but they're in the room because they want a better country. That doesn't mean that they agree on everything. And as a part of that, throughout the Constitutional Convention, there was arguments about everything. There's arguments about how many branches of Congress, how those branches should be made up, how the votes were going to happen in the House, how they were going to happen in the Senate, how many seats there were going to be, what the pay was going to be. So these were contentious fights, and they were in a small room, and they didn't all agree. And now we're at the end of it, and Ben Franklin, the elder statesman, is going to make his last pitch.
But he's tired, so he handed it off to someone else. Went and had a cigarette.
Damn it.
Outside.
It is funny to think about. Like, this is the pitch. And it's not like 90 people like handed in speeches to be read like they would do today. Like, if you're listening to a Senate committee hearing, they all submit questions for the record, or they submit statements for the record. And what that is to basically like act like they were there. But in this case, we have the full like transcripts from the event. And this is like the only like speech at the time. So the only speech at the time, this big speech that we're talking about today, was read by somebody else. But that's okay. So he starts off, "Mr. President, I confess that there are several parts of this Constitution which I do not at present approve. But I am not sure I shall never approve them. For having lived long, I have experienced many instances of being obliged by better information or fuller consideration to change opinions, even on important subjects which I once thought right, but found to be otherwise." So, I love this.
Yeah, this is the sign of a true intellectual as well as a good person. I don't like it now, but I might learn something new, and you might be able to explain to me your opinion, and I might agree with you later. That's welcome to what never happens on the internets these days.
There's a debate I like, and for those of you who are going to fall on the other side of this debate, I apologize, but the guy that was there was just really, really bad at debating this, and you might have a better argument, but it was fun to see how it was responded to. And it was Bill Nye the Science Guy versus a creationist, the guy who was running the Creationist Museum. And at the end of the debate, the moderator asked what was just an amazing question, and it was, "What would it take for you to change your mind?" Now, unfortunately for the creationist in this instance, he had the first response.
Yeah.
And he said, "Nothing. There is absolutely nothing that could change my mind because I know that I have the truth." And then Bill Nye goes, "One piece of information could change my mind." And it was one of the most powerful like answers and debate questions I had ever heard. But this is like Bill Nye had some advantages. He had been on TV.
Oh yeah. For years.
He understood media and kind of modern messaging and talking points. This isn't a modern talking point here, but the oratory control of this statement to convey the thought is just amazing to me.
Yeah. I keep flashing back to that scene in Old School with Will Ferrell, where he has some out of body experience and delivers his debate topic. And the moderator says, "At no time did anything you say represent any kind of truth or intelligent statement." I can't remember what the exact quote is, but anyway, that's just me. Ben Franklin did a better job.
All right. It is therefore that the older I grow, the more apt I am to doubt my own judgment and to pay more respect to the judgment of others. Most men indeed, as well as most sects and religion, think themselves in possession of all truth, and that what wherever others differ from them, it is so far error. For instance, Steele, a Protestant, in a dedication tells the Pope that the only difference between our churches is their opinions of the certainty of their doctrines. The Church of Rome thinks themselves infallible, and the Church of England is never in the wrong. I have to stop here because the next part is one of the coolest parts, but at the same time, it's fun to see, and it's depressing to see that the same debates that were happening at the Constitutional Convention are the same debates that we have around our Thanksgiving tables today.
Yeah, that does continue. You're right, in the 21st century.
But through many private persons think almost as highly of their own infallibility as that of their sect. Few express it so naturally as a certain French lady who, in a dispute with her sister, said, "I don't know how it happens, sister, but I meet with nobody but myself that's always in the right."
Ah, Ben Franklin and his French women.
I love Ben Franklin and his French women. What did we do? We did, what was it? Lincoln did the speech and made the, like, sex joke in the middle of...
Yes.
The middle of talking about intellectual property.
Yeah.
And the Bible.
Yeah.
Ben Franklin, French woman, and the Constitution.
You got to know a little bit of Ben Franklin's history to understand why that is very interesting and just a little bit funny and also really inappropriate for me to make fun of. And I'm not educating you. You look it up. Listener from Uganda.
In these sentiments, I agree to this Constitution with all its faults, because I think a general government necessary for us, and there is no form of government but what may be a blessing to the people if well administered, and believe further that this is likely to be well administered for a course of years, and can only end in despotism as other forms have done before it. So, I wanted to kind of take that out because I believe it kind of pulls away. Mm-hmm. But this is the what is the famous line? Like, we give you your country as long as you can keep it.
I've not heard that famous line. Where would that famous line have been presented?
It's like right. It's like the way they reported this line. No, it was somebody else. I believe it was in the same time period. Basically, like, you know, this is it. It's going to end bad. But I think the point that he is starting here is that this is as good as we can make it.
Yep.
It's going to help you run the country for a few years.
Yeah. And I know really the sentiment is that it's the whole formation of the American version of democracy is a grand experiment. And the founding fathers, many of them expected it, I believe, to eventually be tested so strongly that it may not survive. But it's been a few hundred years and we're doing pretty good. It may not be perfect either, but sure better than a lot of other options.
He continues, "I doubt, too, whether any convention we can obtain may be able to make a better constitution. For when you assemble a number of men to have the advantage of their joint wisdom, you inevitably assemble with those men all their prejudices, their passions, their airs of opinion, their local interest, and their selfish views. From such an assembly, can a perfect production be expected? It therefore astonishes me, sir, to find this system approaching so near to perfection as it does, and I think it will astonish our enemies. Thus, I consent, sir, to this Constitution, because I expect no better and because I am not sure that it is not the best. The opinions I have had of its heirs I sacrifice to the public good. I have never whispered a syllable of them abroad. Within these walls they were born, and they shall die. If every one of us, in returning to our constituents, were to report the objections he has had to it and endeavor to gain partisans in support of them, we might prevent it being generally received and thereby lose all of the salutary effects and great advantages resulting naturally in our favor among foreign nations as well as among ourselves and our real or apparent unanimity. Much of the strength and efficiency of any government in procuring and securing happiness to the people depends on opinion, on the general opinion of the goodness of the government as well as of the wisdom and integrity of its governors. I hope, therefore, that for our own sakes, as a part of the people and for the sakes of posterity, we shall act heartily and unanimously in recommending this constitution wherever our influence may extend, and turn our future thoughts and endeavors to the means of having it well administered. On the whole, sir, I cannot help expressing a wish that every member of the convention who may still have objections to it would with me on this occasion doubt a little of his own infallibility and to make manifest our unanimity and put his name to this instrument.
Well, this guy's a, why did he not deliver the speech himself? How old do you think he was at this time?
He was old. I believe he was actually in his 80s.
I'm not sure. I don't know.
At the time, that's like really, really old. But I believe he was in his 80s. I mean, he was old. And again, it was a very hot room.
If I remember, I think he died in 1790. I've been to the room in Philadelphia. I've been there. And I've actually seen his grave site as well, which is not far from Constitutional Hall. Where they did this, and I can imagine it's not a huge room. It's not an incredibly large room. So if it was hot and there was no such thing as Mr. Carrier's air conditioning, that's a tough place to be. I get that. And of course he was a senior statesman and one of the wisest, I think, in the space. Certainly history has offered that he was one of the wisest in the space.
I believe that this has helped prove that too, because I mean, just it's kind of, I kept reading because I felt like kind of the, I don't know, it's kind of like you're going down a slide or something, and every coda move the next bit of it, and it just kind of flows and builds on itself.
Yeah. Plus, you don't get your face on the hundo if you don't got some credit, some clout.
thus I consent, sir, to this constitution, because I expect no better and because I am not sure that this is not the best. It's the ability to see, and he says this that it's his age. And I see myself at different ages. On Capitol Hill, when you start off, you're infallible. You're young. You're hot blooded. I remember there was a lady that I used to fight with all the time, and now I work with her almost all the time. And do I think she's wrong still? Yeah, sure. But the fact is she's made an impact on kind of society. And I've seen like kind of why she's wrong. Like there's reasons that she's choosing some of the choices that she's made, and those choices have been good. And so like those are my two aspects. And what's funny is I can read this and I'm like, I'm not there yet.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool to see. Like I can't, like if it's not perfect, I can't admit that it still might be the best.
I'll tell you from my own personal life. So I have been given unreasonable blessings in my life, that I did not deserve. I became a college professor when I was 26 years old. And this is nothing against any of my former colleagues or anyone else, but that was a fight. That was a, you know, what, listen to me. I actually do know what I'm talking about. But when I, sometime after you turn 40, you don't have to have that fight. People listen to you. And when you've done something now, I work in a different industry now, and I have worked in that industry for 22 years. They listen to you. I'm in my 50s now, and things change as you get older, which I think is what your ultimate point was. My outlook on the world has changed, and the outlook that people have about me and my opinions and thoughts and what I think is going to be the best way to make this a success, you know, changes. I think that's just the nature of life. I think that's, you know, that makes a lot of sense, I hope, to a lot of people. And it's very frustrating if it's not true for you, as you grow older. So I think, you know, being a senior statesman, Franklin probably felt comfortable in his own skin, like some of the others may not have, and definitely had had the experience to create and write, although apparently not deliver, a statement like this, where he says, listen, we're not going to get anything better. This is the best we're going to get. I like it. Let's rock and roll. That's what I think.
All right. And then the other part of this last piece is interesting, too. They, and he doesn't talk about it here. I actually thought it was in the speech, and it's not. So I read kind of around the speech, and I haven't been able to find it yet. But there was a motion to keep all of the proceedings for the Constitutional Convention secret until the deaths of all of the founders that I believe were there. And Ben Franklin makes the case that it is so, well, the case was made, I guess, if I don't remember where it was, I don't know that it was Ben Franklin, but the case was made because they didn't want foreign countries to come in and undermine the kind of sales pitch for the Constitution. So they had a real and raw debate, and, you know, should Pennsylvania have the same amount of votes as
Delaware?
Virginia was big as Delaware.
Yeah.
And who were different. They were different places. And the end result was multiple people taking multiple sides. And so it would have been ugly, and it would have been fairly easy to kick down our Constitution, or at least pull the wind out of the sails, as Ben Franklin pointed out in this speech, of our new country. And so it's made me think, when we have this current like partisan craziness and kind of the bitterness of social media, if it would be better, and I don't know that it would be, because there's downsides to this as well, but would it be better if the debates were mainly secret that Congress had?
Well, I think that secrecy in government generally, we got to walk carefully on this one, in the preparation and creation of a government generally is a negative thing. And I think Ben Franklin's idea, or whoever idea it was, that it should be more open and transparent is a good thing, because you're ruling over citizens. That doesn't mean secrecy doesn't have a place in government operations, because of course it does. I had security clearance like a little bit once. But no, why don't you tell us, whatever. The French,
I get it, but
the French modeled their whole damn revolution after us.
And Franklin might have been on both sides, but in this case, he was pro the secrecy of this debate.
Yeah.
And I had just never thought about it that way. And I mean, honestly, I had. There's a research service on Capitol Hill. It's called the Congressional Research Service.
Yeah.
And the papers that they put out are some of the most amazing papers that I've ever read. And that's because their job is actually not to have a political, like, they're just supposed to deliver the facts.
Yeah.
And honestly, they will deliver the facts, and then they will have like sometimes a section on, well, and here's what Republicans have done and their arguments for it, and here's what Democrats have done and their arguments for it. Yeah. And so like they'll even kind of give you context sometimes, And so there has been a push, because these papers are amazing, to make them public. Now, most of them are public. You can go on and find them, but they've been released by other people.
Yeah.
And because if they were public, they start becoming more politicized and political. And so it's a problem. Whoever's in charge wants all of the CRS papers to come out and look like they're making the right moves.
Right.
And CRS just doesn't do that. And that's not their intent. Even let's say the Democrats are in control. The Democratic staffers don't want CRS to do that because they want to know however much information they can get. Like, no staffer on either side of the aisle wants to do something bad for America. But think tanks on both sides lie for them all the time. So it's one of the interesting things to me. I found out about the secrecy because of this speech. And so he at least talks about it. I think it's an interesting thing. And at least because we have the country we have today, I'm glad they kept it secret.
You know, I guess I'd probably fall on the side of, you know, if you're having a conversation with one or two people and you want that to remain private, okay. I can see why you might do that, but I kind of fall on the other side of, you know, maybe transparency in the organization of a government is a good thing. What do I know, though?
No, I'm a libertarian. I'm mostly with you. I just think it's the Ben Franklin lesson. I might be wrong on this, and secrecy might be a good thing.
I'm going to make shirts with Ben Franklin's face that says, I might be wrong on this.
That could be our merch.
Yeah, there you
All
go.
Right. Go check. Our merch coming soon. Yeah. All right. Well, this was a short speech and it was quick. So thank you all for listening. Remember, hit that like and subscribe button. And more importantly, share this with your friends. We keep growing. We are getting close to the top 5% of podcasts. So we appreciate your support. And let's keep it growing. Thanks, Kelly.
Thank you.
Thank you.